board reports. So I emailed out to all the board members what the state board is considering revising the anti-degradation policy. This is not going to be done quickly. It's going to be done. I mean, they want to do a conceptual program this fall. So they've done their stakeholder outreach, and that's basically what I sent to you was the results from their listening sessions with various stakeholder groups around the state. And I just wanted to give the board members a chance to weigh in on if there are any. I mean, I personally found it really hard to get my brain around this because this is just a huge thing to do. But I wanted to give you a chance to say if there are any really important things you would like to see or not see in the new anti-dig policy. So let me see if I can remember. Part of the reason for doing this is there's ongoing litigation that the state has regarding that there are certain areas where people just are not in compliance and everyone knows it, but there isn't much that can be done about it. So passing a regulation isn't going to solve that problem. That's one of the issues, one of the reasons for reopening it. The current anti-degradation policy only deals with high-quality waters, so it does. The state board feels there's a need for tools to deal with waters that are already degraded and where there's legacy impacts, and that's the issue group that Mike Plasiak is working on. What were the other reasons, Patty? Do you remember?
The last policy was in 1968, and it's probably a good idea to revisit it. And as our with the drought and groundwater pumping, this is a good time to maybe relook at that to make it more workable. The nitrate dialogue, where there's been such problems in the Sun Belt, has really kind of pushed this dialogue about anti-degradation, as well as the stakeholders. The environment has been frustrated over the years that the analyses, at least they feel, haven't been done consistently or uniformly across the state. I think it's multiple pressure points reaching that.
So I just wanted to open up the discussion to board members this will come up in the chair conference calls that are going to ask me, what does Region 6 think about this? And I don't feel comfortable speaking on behalf of all of you if I haven't given you a chance to tell me what you think. So, what do you think? What would you like to see in an updated anti-dig policy?
Well, I'll take a quick shot by saying that I don't think I have an answer to that question this morning, because this is a difficult and challenging thing to look at. There's not a lot of information that I have, at least relative to this, what's being discussed. And so part of what I would hope is that, we can develop, for people who are interested from the board, a mechanism that lets us participate more actively in the development of this as it goes on towards the fall. I would note as an aside that perhaps the State Board could get earlier, more timely, and more complete participation and input from the Regional Board members if they took the position that perhaps Regional Boards were stakeholders, and they could therefore get to go to the stakeholder meeting, which apparently have long since passed. Probably would have been a good idea to start asking the question of what the regional board members and board staff think of this before today. But that's not you, that's someone in Sacramento. a couple of thoughts that I have is that there's a lot of emphasis on groundwater in the bullet points that we saw, and so I would hope that as the state goes forward with trying to develop and implement a statutory program of groundwater management, that this get incorporated into that and made part of that conversation, so that the state doesn't develop a statutory scheme or regulatory scheme about groundwater over here and go racing past this issue and then potentially preclude discussion of this issue at a later point in time. Also, I think it's important that that we emphasize as a region the fact that we sit in a different place with respect to anti-degradation, which is the fact that we have the water that needs to be protected because its quality is high now. Again, the more I see the state, I understand that the idea that the state can do various things on a statewide policy or broad policy level, and that's fine as long as we bear in mind that there are some regions that just don't sit in the same place, whether it's resources, whether it's population pressures, whether it's historical water uses, whatever, the list could be very long, as the rest of the state. And so we have a different interest in what an anti-degradation policy is going to look like than the people in the Bay Area. I would want to make sure that our interest did not get lost as the policy is crafted for areas of the state who are dealing with problems. We're trying to deal with the non-occurrence problems we already have.
Thank you. Any other comments?
I would not like to see us backed into compromising allowing degradation to take place because the state has set some regulations in place that give the responsible party leverage that they don't currently have. Seems to me that the current policy is very broadly drawn, and we have dealt with it at any number of levels, from requiring cleanup to actual background to non-attainment zones, say at Sierra Army Depot, over the years. And so we've actually hashed out the entire range, I think, of possible outcomes working with the current regulation. And I have a feeling that the reason why it hasn't been so successful, say, in the Central Valley, is that they actually have not really tackled it. They have all the tools they need now and the power that they need now. They just aren't willing to actually do it. I think they want the backup of something from the state board in order to give them some standing, some leverage, some help, which we haven't needed, fortunately. So, again, I think we want to be careful that we aren't pushed into making compromises that we wouldn't naturally make.
I have to agree with Peter that we're drawn into the process late. I mean, it's unfortunate, but I think we do need to be a part of this discussion. Okay. I'm deeply concerned about groundwater and the effects on small communities. I'll leave it at that.
I agree with Mr. Sandell. I would hate to compromise the protection of our waters. I'd also recommend that any attempt to revise this policy should be exercised with great caution, because this policy has protected us quite well for a long period of time, and we have a lot of pristine waters in the Hunt and that need to continue to have that protection.
But we have grappled with less than pristine aquifers and degradation, further degradation. We've made decisions, Victorville area for a power plant and all of that, where we allowed temporary increase in TDS. So what we have now is sufficient if you're willing to work with it.
I agree. I'm not convinced yet that invasions are necessary, at least in our region.
I think where this comes up, too, is Board Member Sandell, after the last board meeting, you had a question for me about our WDR's permitting
degradation.
discharges to land, which, you know, could result and often does result incrementally in degradation to groundwater, and then how do we deal with that? And how, so I think in part what, as I understand that the State Board is trying to do, is to also look at how do we look at the anti-degradation policy, not necessarily changing it, but how do we implement it in terms of permitting discharges to land, to groundwater, which, you know, over time, how do we address this? And I think that's where I think there wasn't a lot of clarity for people on what that salt nutrient management plan meant. And I think the idea is to help people see this is your long-range tool for mitigating the impacts to groundwater. This is the tool for helping you to long-range manage your discharges, because I think currently we're only, at each and every permit, we're only looking at that permit and that discharge, and we're not looking at necessarily the impacts to the aquifer in a more holistic way, and I think that's where they're trying to go.
And if I could add to that, our own Mike Plazia is in this working group, and we're doing white papers, issue papers on different chunks or pieces of, you know, some of the key points of this, like what to do about legacy. He is heading up one on assimilative capacity, which you heard, and that is to the heart of the issue that Kim brought, is what does that mean? What is acceptable degradation? How are you going to measure that? How does that actually work in play for decisions you make today and decisions you might make 30 years from now?
I think all of us are for better tools. No question.
Mm-hmm. And it's clear to me that, you know, this matters a lot to us, especially in the southern Mahant region. The board member from the Colorado Basin made the suggestion on the chair's conference call that the IRWIN groups be at the table regarding, you know, making decisions on anti-degradation, which the State Board hadn't thought about, and you know, makes a lot of sense. And so I think that, I mean, there's interest in developing that idea more, but it's going to take some work to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the questions I had, I'd like your feedback on, is do you think it would be a good idea to be more permissive when degradation is in pursuit of some broad state policy? For example, when we are recharging groundwater basins, so restoring water, you know, increasing water supplies, basically, versus a coal-based power plant, you know, where that energy source is in opposition to policies to bring down carbon. You think that would be a good direction to go, or is that dangerous?
I think it's premature to come up with an answer. But part of addressing that is that we need to resolve the conflict between what the Department of Public Health sets for standards for purposeful recharge of groundwater versus incidental recharge from a discharge from the waste treatment plant. They're utterly in conflict. Right now, if you have incidental recharge by something that meets a WDR, it could not necessarily meet drinking water standards. It doesn't matter because it's allowed, because it's not intended to be recharged, and yet it is. But if you actually set up a recharge system, it'll go under the Department of Public Health, and their standards are entirely different, and particularly, I've heard, you know, rigorous and difficult sometimes for the same goal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's something that you would be better off addressing that, I think, than because what you just, the question you just asked, you would answer individually in each instance, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done it already, and we can just continue to do it. But that's a bigger statewide policy
mm-hmm.
question that actually needs to be addressed.
And I think that the question you're asking is a
an important question. It's addressable within the balancing process that we already have available, but it requires a different sense of scope because your potential project impact area broadens a whole lot, and it's going to broaden a whole lot as we get into the concept of groundwater. It changes what the physical footprint of an individual project may be, and so, you know, part of that, part of sorting this out is going to be how do you define scope and how do you define the impact zones from what might appear to be an isolated project or an isolated instance over here. People have to get attuned to the notion that the ripples go a lot farther perhaps than we've given credit for to date, and that's going to be part of the balancing. That's why including the Irwins, I think, is a really, really good idea, if only because they're purposefully set up to look at that broader geographic.
Any other comments? Thank you all. That's really helpful to me.
Thanks for providing.
Yes, yeah. Thank you for the opportunity.
And with that, we'll adjourn the meeting and resume our discussions in September in Barstow.